Thank you, Andy. Hi, everyone. My name is Shay Meddings, and I'm the host of the Mental as Anyone podcast. I'm a psychologist, and I interview comedians and other entertainers about their mental health with the aim of helping to increase understanding and awareness of mental health. I've had some really insightful and interesting conversations, including with Andy, and I encourage you to have a listen. So find Mental as Anyone through the Facebook page, on iTunes or other podcasting platforms. Stay safe and well.
Hey, it's the Antisocial Podcast, and before we kick into this week's episode, come on over and join me on Patreon. That's right, patreon.com/AndyDowling is the place to go. Support starts at only $1 a month, dirt cheap, gets you a little feel-good feeling in your gut, and there are other tiers there where you get exclusive content, bonus podcast episodes, old-school newsletters that get mailed out to you in your little letterbox, and all sorts of other stuff that I'll probably be adding over time. Go and check it all out, patreon.com/AndyDowling. It's a massive help for the podcast, keeps this whole thing fueled, and you'll be able to see a little goal that I have there at the moment to increase this podcast and make it even bigger and better for you all. So go and check it all out, patreon.com/AndyDowling. And here we are. That's right. Episode 228 of the Antisocial Podcast is here. And this week's guest is Tom Tanaki. Tom is a writer, a satirist, an anti-fascist activist, and a comedian. He's a funny dude. And we had a great chat talking about all sorts of stuff in this episode. Go and check Tom out on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, the lot, your dog. Over at andysocial.net or andydowling.net, or you should be able to click through on your podcast player. Tom's star sign on his Instagram is yelling at racist dogs. He's got a podcast called The Poor Can Feed the Birds, which, as he says, is all about himself being a person that gets preoccupied with shit cunts and what they're up to. So that'll sort of shed a bit of light about what that podcast is all about. A really entertaining guy, really funny guy. He is one dedicated guy, totally dedicated to the cause of the causes, and just putting the comedy part aside, just some really interesting and important things that he talks about. So I hope you guys enjoy it. A great chat. As I said, go to andydowling.net or andysocial.net, search for Tom on the socials, and make sure you let him know what you think of this one. But a great chat. Please enjoy this awesome, awesome convo with Tom Tanaki.
Yeah, things are good, man. Things are really good. I suppose that we've all achieved a sense of something like normalcy with the fucking thing, hey? I don't know. I mean, it's weird, but we're all at least sort of somewhat used to it. I'm sort of used to my new normal. I mean, I'm still working, you know, from home. I'm doing this and that here and there, just doing more of this online content shit, you know? And fucking, I'm all good, man. I don't have corona. How are you doing?
Well, I think I'm in the same boat as you. I'm corona free for the time being. So, and hang on, one tick. That's me just slapping the desk, touching wood there. So we'll hopefully that'll stay as is, and I won't contract anything and jinx myself. But
we could well be asymptomatic host carriers.
Very true, very true. Well, luckily I've pretty much locked myself away for the past several weeks, and I think what you said's kind of true. I guess there's I've kind of got used to it. It's a bit normal now, and there's a bit of routine in place. I'm not sort of just waking up and sort of just rolling out of bed and trying to find the laptop and just wake up sort of by midday and sort of work out what the hell I'm doing with my life. I'm sort of
still trying to
work it out a bit, but I don't mind it. I mean, mind you, I mean, I think we're probably in the fortunate side of the fence with a lot of this. I mean, from what you just said, like, you're able to work remotely, I can do so as well, and you know, we can sort of just live with some slight inconveniences, and there's a lot of other poor buggers out there that have got to slog it out and try and work out what to do, or run the risk of contracting something on a day-to-day basis. So
true, bro. I spent my past few weeks trying to, you know, I mean, yeah, part of what I do is I don't even know what I would call it. Just fucking being a sticky beak into various fucking things and being a fucking nosy fucking pest. And so I really got into the whole tenancy thing. Mm. I just did, you know, because I could see that I had a tenancy lawyer reach out to me pretty early on in the pandemic and say, like, if anyone's being fucked over by their landlord, then give us an oi. Mm. I'll be happy to provide them with pro bono advice, which is sick, you know. So I put that out. The amount of tenancy things that I've dealt with, the amount of gronk fucking landlords, bro, that I've heard about, I can't believe how... No, I can believe how fucked they are, but it's just intense, you know. And these are for people who are already, as you've said, you know, in a much worse position, you know. I've got mates who are fucking sex workers, who are this and that. They're not, you know, their income isn't on paper enough for them to even be able to demonstrate that it went down. No one's giving them the JobKeeper payment. They're going to have a real difficult time even applying through Centrelink for any benefits, given the kind of work they did, you know, having to show that shit on paper. So there's a lot of people who are fucking pretty bad off, you know. Yeah, man.
Well, I guess, and that's probably a big thing, like all that vetting that has to happen in order to receive anything. I mean, I was reading a couple of articles online where they were sort of explaining some of the loopholes that you have to, not loopholes, sorry, the hoops that you got to jump through, sorry, just to validate, you know, any form of a government assistance. And a lot of that's disclosing a hell of a lot of personal information to a real estate, and then in turn, I assume, the landlord as well. So it's kind of a really, really ugly sort of thing, because I don't think you need to really go to that level of detail to basically prove that whatever you're doing, regardless of whether it's traditional or not, that, you know, you can't do it, you know. So it's, yeah, I don't know. It's a weird thing. And I guess the interesting thing that I've noticed over the past several weeks is that we've never had anything like this, at least in our lifetimes. And especially with the technology and everything that's progressed over the past, even just the last 10 years, let alone the last 50 years. And so you just watch people just scratching their heads going, I don't know what I'm doing. I've got no idea. And so, you know, talking about the government and everything like that, they're just no one, you know, the people got wrong intentions, of course, but I think people just don't have a clue. I think people just making shit up as they go and just trying to roll with it and see, oh, well, that doesn't work. And then we'll burn a few people in the process. Oh, well, we'll pivot. We'll try something else. Or they double down to save face and just completely make a shitstorm of it all.
Totally. Look, I think across the board we've, you know, covered, like, the government's measures covered a hell of a lot of people. And I think that, in long story short, has been why we've been able to see that curve flatten or what have you, because we've actually provided not everyone but a lot of people with the ability to fucking do whatever it takes to stay the fuck at home. Yeah, you know? So it's actually been a lot easier. But at the same time, I mean, it's been interesting watching, like, I follow a bloke called Jeremy Pox, and he runs up the Australian Unemployed Workers Union, which is meant to be, you know, so people contribute fees to it if they're still in work and they sympathise with it. But, you know, it's meant to be a union that advances the interests of people who are out of work and are dealing with the fuckery of Newstart. Mm. And, you know, now in one fell swoop, they've seen this temporary doubling of Newstart, which actually should have happened anyway, because the amount that they were on previously was just not enough for fucking anyone to live on. You know what I mean? It's like this punishment for bad people who aren't good enough to get a job. You know what I mean? And then in addition to that, you're going to go to all these fucking, jump through all these hoops just to try and go for work that they can't really actually offer to you. You know, very few options on offer through their job seeker networks. And, you know, it's really fun. They've seen all these, on one hand, they've seen all these, you know, changes occur, but we know that they're just tied to this temporary kind of, this is so we can get you all back to normal. And then they will send it back to normal. So it's a weird time, man. It's a weird time for everyone.
Oh, man. I find it interesting. I mean, it's fascinating because every day you wake up and you go, well, what fucking drama or circus is about to start up? You know, there's always something going on. I mean, just in our own backyard, let alone globally. But at the same time, I mean, it can be a real stress out for a lot of people out there because really, I mean, you know, I wake up and I'm mildly entertained and disgruntled or whatever that might be. But in the end, I'm still chugging away. But for other people, you wake up and just suddenly the goalposts have moved, and it's like, oh, well, I've got to leave my house and try and hustle something or try and work out how the hell I'm going to survive the next week or whatever it might be. So it's, it's a very weird time.
And at the same time, I've seen this. This is such a massively radicalizing moment for many, many people. And I, you know, a lot of what I do with research events and what have you is look at that kind of thing. And previously, my sort of mainstay is looking at fucking little wannabe Nazi terrorist dead shit. And that's what I've done for a few years now, you know. Right now, it's a very different spread of people. People are being radicalized in the idea that 5G is causing this. And you've got hippies rallying out in Mullumbimby in big packs. Yeah. And they don't give a shit about social distancing. They don't believe in it. They think that this is a 5G thing, killing everyone's lungs and the bees because the world government are trying to depopulate the world. Dude, it's lunacy. We should talk about some of these insane conspiracy theories.
Oh, well, funnily enough, I mean, I was listening to your podcast over the past week or so, and I went back to the start and started listening, and I've missed a couple in between, but I listened to the most recent one, and one thing that you said right at the beginning, and I just fucking laughed, and I wrote down, and this might, I don't know, you tell me if this describes a lot of you in a holistic sense. It's you're a person that gets preoccupied with shit cunts and what they're up to. and I almost shrieked with laughter when I heard that. I thought, oh, that's gold. I love it. But, I mean, I guess
I can't help it. There was these golden first few weeks of the pandemic. I mean, not that golden, but in hindsight, where it's like, everyone's, how are we going to survive? How are we going to get through this? What are the measures the government's going to come up with? How do we possibly, flush out an existence in this thing? And, I'm helping out in mutual aid groups at SICK, know what I mean? Like, everyone's helping each other out where they can. Great. But then this is, and it's probably in me as much as anything else, this inexorable shift towards the arseholes. I have to find out what the arseholes are up to. And then once I notice them, that's all I can notice.
Oh, yeah. And well, that's right. It's like, this is the stupidest comparison, but it's like when you buy a car and the car's, this weird blue and you've never seen it before, but suddenly as soon as you bought it, you see all those weird blue cars driving around everywhere. So you sort of
you
fine-tuned your radar for it. So, so you notice it everywhere. But, I mean, I think with the conspiracy theory stuff, I've never... Luckily for me, I mean, and people might argue this, but I've never been sucked into it. I think there's been a couple where sometimes you sort of look at it and go, oh, that's kind of like a really sort of exciting sort of sci-fi sort of fictional story that could be a great movie or something like that. But then, I mean, I've had mates over the years who go, oh, you got to watch this, man. It's going to open your eyes up. And you're like, oh, and then you start watching it. I mean, I can't watch this. For starters, it's way too fucking depressing. And if it was true, what the fuck am I going to do about it? And this is, we're talking about, this New World Order sort of stuff and all this rubbish. But I find that there's like these two main pots of people, at least. I mean, there's more nuances out there. But I think there's obviously the people that just live and breathe it no matter what time of the year it is and whatever's going on in the world. They just, it doesn't matter. This is their 24-hour, 7-day-a-week occupation. They just immerse themselves in a YouTube rabbit holes, whatever it might be. They're in their online dark web communities, etc. But then you got everybody else in this other bucket, and not everybody else, but the other bucket is people that I think just really like to get involved in drama. They love drama and sort of like the casual bystander. And they're probably not overly interested in sort of digging into deep detail on any particular topic, but they probably also like reality TV dramas, like TV shows and very sort of basic forms of entertainment. And for this, it's sort of like there's enough things to sort of throw a few flags up that makes it exciting. And so, we like to share bad news. I think a lot of us sort of have this sort of little adrenaline rush when we get to gossip about something and spread something around. And people get sucked into it. And so I think that's why this 5G stuff like is just incredible. I've never seen anything like it because suddenly I'm seeing people that I've never heard talk about any sort of rubbish like this before, but they're suddenly going, oh, I've heard about this 5G stuff. And you go, you gotta be fucking joking. King Kong.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what it reminds me of, in a sense, funnily enough, and this is why I've got my spider senses tingling about it, and it's making my attention turn to it. It actually reminds me of the 2015-16 sort of period where the Patriot Movement started, and suddenly everyone on your friends list, not everyone, but quite a few people started talking about the perils of Islam, and you know what I mean? It's just sort of like this moment, very different circumstances, obviously, but this moment where the internet suddenly really pollinated this series of bullshit ideas in a lot of people's heads, and you see it spreading. You can just see it just by logging onto Facebook. You see that suddenly everyone knows at least a few people who suddenly believe in this thing. And when that's happening, you know that's happening right around the connected world, you know. Yeah, but you're absolutely right. I mean, you talked about drama, people that love drama. Throughout everything that I've been a part of, like every sort of movement I've looked at and things like that, there's a huge social capital in going, oh, I have enemies. You know, it's exciting for people to go, I have enemies and what have you. I've wrestled with it myself because, you know, you could easily argue the same thing of me, with being anti-fascist or what have you. Like, am I just obsessed with fucking having enemies? And I am a fucking massive smartass, and maybe it could be said I'm just looking to irritate people, you know. But at the same time, like lots of these people are trying to blow stuff up, so that makes me feel good about myself fucking with them.
do you ever feel like, I mean, you know, I've looked at a bit of your content that you've been putting out and sort of having a bit of a dig into it, and you know, I mean, you're highlighting people out there that are not doing great things. I mean, have you ever had contact made towards you from any of these people or groups or even just people that sort of may lean in a different direction to the direction you lean? Do you ever get any sort of hate back or any sort of moments where you go, oh, fuck it, no, I'm not that I've overstepped it, but I may have stepped on an ant's nest, so to speak.
Dude, I've stepped on so many fucking ants' nests over the years. It's ridiculous. After doing a little bit of character comedy and writing and this and that, but just on a very small scale, I started turning my attention to doing that, but doing a fake patriot character in 2016, because I'd had a few months of obsession with this growing movement, like it was Reclaim Australia and what have you back then, you know, watching the rallies and then eventually starting to go to them, to watch these people, you know, sort of flag cape bearing gronks and just really getting into a few things about them, like finding them to be really comedic, like the way that they would all fall out with each other and the way that if you looked at their movement, actually their biggest enemies were themselves because they were just in this constant race to be the most popular on Facebook and in real life. And I loved that. I loved that their biggest frustrations really were all internal, even though that they would talk about Islam and they would talk about lefties and what have you. But I really loved that their actual greatest enemies were themselves. And so I started my own fake patriot group. And I thought to myself, it developed into something. It was called the Million Flag Patriots. And I thought to myself, let's make it that this fake patriot group, yeah, it's taking the piss, but actually I wanted that group to do everything that real groups would do. So we were going to rallies and we were squabbling with all the other groups. I was making up stories in videos where, you know, pretending that I knew all of them and we'd had, you know, I had fights with Blair Cottrell and I'd bashed him and I'd bashed this other one. And just like how they would have air out all their drama online for attention, you know. And look, I just started getting more and more over the top and bombastic with that. And within 3 months, man, they were on a fucking witch hunt for me. Like, there's something really valid. Like, say you go from just doing small scale, you know, and I'm just thinking, I've looked back on it a few years ago now. Like, I'd gone from writing stuff, had a little blog, go to spoken word, do a few little things. Suddenly you do this thing, and suddenly, like we were talking about with people, you know, the social capital that comes with people hating you. Suddenly I've got people that want to fucking kill me and I've got other people messaging me going, oh, this is the best. You are really doing, you know, really, this is really important work. It's really validating when you go from fucking 10 people looking at your fucking post about nothing to that, you know. So there was I felt that the work was getting somewhere, but there was also this sugar rush of validation from all this wave of hate and love that came through all of a sudden. But it was really transformative. I mean, I did a video. The story of that group was that I'd made up a new Australian flag. And I had it. Just had heaps more flags, stars and stripes and shit on it. And it was just the Australian flag, but it's called the triple flag because it had three times as many stars on it. And well, there's just this sort of corny aesthetic. Like you'd look at
three times Patriots better.
Yeah. You'd look at Patriots would be at a rally with like an Aussie flag, Ned Kelly helmet on, you know, and like it was just really, really intense, like over the top kind of bombarding with patriotic aesthetic, you know. And so I just took that to the next degree, you know what I mean? Did that on acid. But I, in that story, he therefore had to get rid of the old flag. And so that gave the excuse for me to start doing creative ways of burning the old Australian flag, which really was just like, you know, I'm neck deep in this thing looking at nationalists who all hate me. And I'm just looking for ways to bait them, you know what I mean? Like more and more and more. So I hung 20 flags up on a clothesline and like covered them in petrol and set them on fire. And that was it. That was the first really bit off more than I can chew moment because they went on a massive fucking witch hunt for me, you know. Within a couple of months, they had found my personal details and they'd aired them out and they were all like, I'll go over to this bloke's house. Any, you know, ex-ADF veterans who want to talk to him for what he did with the flag. and so it was just, like, it was a big transformative moment. Dude, yeah, I've had the entire Patriot movement and their various successor nationalist movements obsess over me and stalk me and all this kind of thing, you know. You do get used to it after a while, but, yes, I've bitten off more than I can chew in several respects a few times, man.
But it must have, I mean, it in some ways it hasn't exactly slowed you down or anything. I mean, you're still getting out there and talking about a lot of this stuff and still talking about these gronks and it, I mean, obviously there'll be stuff behind the scenes where you sort of sit back every once in a while and go, oh yeah, all right, might have to just be a little bit more strategic about how I do this or what are going to be the consequences. But I don't know. I mean, from the outside, it looks like, you know, in a way it sort of fuels or validates what you're doing and why you're doing it, is that, you know, there's these reactions and there's these people that are taking what you're saying seriously from both sides of the fence, whether it be good or bad.
Well, yeah, I think like I've always wrestled with when you're doing stuff to maybe comment on, or like with the old comedic stuff like bait and provoke or whatever you're trying to do with pretty scummy elements of society, then if you get that level of threat in response, and this is something I've always wrestled with, is like what is the best way to deal with trolls and bullies en masse when you're engaging with them, you're provoking them, and they're threatening you or what have you in response. And I have always reflected on the best way to do that. I've never really thought to myself, you know, I've never really aired out the fucking thousands of threats I'll get. Like, you'll sometimes talk about it if I get a funny death threat. And yes, there is such a thing as a funny death threat. Someone said to me once that they were going to chuck me in a cage with crabs or pigs to eat me alive. And that's just a radically different, like, pigs.
Is that,
yeah, all right, Silence of the Lambs, I get it. Crabs? What?
But were they going to give you the choice? Were they going to say, look, now I've got two options for you. You got pigs or crabs. What are you feeling? Like or is it going to be like sort of a lucky dip thing? You don't know until you walk into the cage or get dropped into it. Or are they going to mix them both up? Is it going to be pigs and crabs together? Or, you know, how's that?
Do the crabs slowly clip me off with their little clippers?
Yeah. Start with my toenails and we'll go from there. Yeah.
That's what I did. I shared a poll. I actually thought I'd ask my own followers at the time which they preferred, you know what I mean? Like, vote for which animals should eat me to death. Anyway, so there's a social capital that comes actually. And you can look at anyone that does anything political, you know. There's lots of people that share the attacks that they've received. Mm-hmm. Either for a laugh or in kind of a, you know, look how serious this is for me and they share it, and there comes with that a certain capital. You know, you look a bit like a martyr figure because everyone goes, oh, no, you know, they're risking it all to bring me the truth. You know, yeah. it can make you feel a bit like a martyr, and you can use that. But I don't want to lean too much into that because it seems a little gratuitous for me when I'm often, like, all I would have to do is just log the fuck off and not do any of this. If I felt that sorry for myself, all I could just do is opt out, you know what I mean? But I choose to do what I do because I take it seriously, you know what I mean? But I also don't want a series of nasty, obsessive trials of bullies to feel like they're having a profound impact on me. Even though over the years, of course, naturally, you've got a life to lead and people can threaten things that are important to you. And well, I've dealt with some pretty psychotic people, you know what I mean, man? Like some of these people in these movements out there are pretty bad, man, you know? So, but I don't necessarily want those people, the worst of the worst, to know that they're having any kind of impact. So a part of that is just not talking about it, right? And just forging on, you know. Like over the years of it, since 2016 and onwards, yeah, like some big changes came. I became very good at protecting my private information and such. And, you know, there's always, because of some of that documenting obsessive nasty, horrible people, there's always going to be a degree of I won't reveal too much of my personal life to anyone, you know what I mean? It's just an important protective measure, you know what I mean? I just think that's inevitable. But more important than that is just not letting them know that there's any effect and forging on, as you say. You know, I've just kept going on. You know, you not put on a brave face, but I've just continued to take the mick, you know. There's nothing better for undermining a nasty, violent, psychotic bullies like violent nationalists and what have you than just continuing to undermine them, you know, and to take the piss.
Well, I guess humour would be like one of the best things that you can do because you're not just highlighting or exposing, you know, bad people or people doing just inappropriate things. It's a case of sometimes you need to convince people through humour and you attract a different group of people that suddenly it's a softer way of raising an issue that people may be a little bit ignorant to or just have no awareness of. And so through the humour you sort of go, oh, you gotta like, is there an element of seriousness to this? Is it some truth behind this? And then you sort of go, oh, fuck, like these people exist or you know, or whatever the topic is coming through in that message that you're delivering. And I think humour is so underrated, especially in any sort of political or sort of social sort of topic space in this country anyway. I think especially sort of in the last sort of 10 or 15 years, and there's a few people that are really sort of pushing it a lot harder now, and I think suddenly those people that would sort of lean in whatever direction they felt through fear, like, you know, going back to what you said before about 2016 and people suddenly, you know, covering their Facebook profiles with Australian flags or the Eureka Stockade flag or anything like that, and with not even understanding any of the messages that any of these things carry. But, you know, through humour, you could potentially win those people over with this really soft sort of way of going, hey, this guy's funny, and maybe there's a little bit more to it.
Yeah, I believe that humour and satire plays huge roles in I really, really do. They're the most important things to me, the most important tools to me personally anyway. A diversity of tactics is important when you're trying to get any fucking, any kick, any goal, or get any sort of thing done. But, yeah, I process shit things that make me angry by laughing at them anyway. On a personal level, that's just what I do. But also, what I believe is that there's a way of mocking or undermining something that takes it seriously and that gets into the muck and wades about and fucking, you know, tries to understand it by actually confronting it. And to me, so it was 2000 and as we keep talking about this period where I started doing, you know, I guess fringe political comedy or what have you, or activist political comedy, and that was 2015, 16. Well, you know what? With a million flag patriots, like, we were going there to where they were, and we were baiting and provoking them. We did everything that they did. There was a hefty whack of danger that came with that, because it involved confronting, actually, the people that we were trying to mock and to undermine. And since then, after Million Flag Patriots, I sort of, you know, their movement changed. It still remained popular, but it sort of turned into something where there were these rock star kind of racists or rock star nationalists who would go out and, you know, you'd pay hundreds of dollars to go to a VIP ticket with them. So suddenly it wasn't rallies anymore, but it was like paid events, you know, with like US touring racists, you know, and you'd go there to their event and suddenly they were all like, oh, no, I'm a paying punter now. I'm not like a, you know, far-right extremist. I'm just paying to go and see Milo Yiannopoulos at a show. So you can't attack me because I'm that. So we, you know, in that context in 2017, we started Yard, or Yelling at Racist Dogs, as it was called at the start, which is really just does what it says on the packet.
Yeah.
It's yelling at racist dogs. Or we changed the acronym to suit different circumstances. But basically it was to going to these kinds of events and just bellowing, not aggressive stuff, but just really dumb, over-the-top abuse or just yelling really dumb shit at people like that. Again, like, pretty dumb humour on the face of it, actually, like, you know, depending on the videos, you know. But the underlying thing was that you'll find out about who we're confronting or talking about by watching that content.
Mm.
But at the same time, it's not just sitting back and sort of mocking, you know, like mocking all racists for being stupid bogans from the country, because that's not actually true. If that were true, then why are the most organised nationalist movements in Australia all from Melbourne? You know what I mean? Like getting in there and actually confronting the stuff that you're talking about is very different to like a kind of a late show or like a Stephen Colbert kind of like, these people are all really stupid. And we're trying to sort of, I was always trying to flesh out something that put its money where its mouth was, kind of thing, you know what I mean? It didn't just sort of sit back and mock that which it said was supposed to be, you know, bad for people or bad for the country. Fucking get in there, you know what I mean? Like, stand up and do something that involves a bit of risk if you actually think that it's that bad, instead of just sitting back and tittering with a bunch of people in a fucking, you know, on an online video or in a comedy thing or on a panel on a TV show. Like, actually get in there, you know?
Yeah, instead of sort of the diluted sort of approach or lukewarm approach where you're trying to make sure that, you know, you're appeasing everybody, no matter what extreme, you know, people sit and backgrounds, and you're just trying to make sure that you say this nice lukewarm, nice and gentle, and just we won't say anything too opinionated or anything like that, and we'll just keep cruising along. And they're usually, you know, the people that have an element of, you know, relative comfort in their lives anyway, so they can afford to just sort of cruise along. But I think just seeing, you know, people like yourself sort of go out and you know, take risks, but get amongst it and then show people. I think it just sort of, I think it just brings the topics to life a little bit more. I think it just makes it a bit more of a reality. And so suddenly, you know, not everyone may get out there to the extent that you're getting out there, but I think it just becomes something where people start making more intentional decisions on a day-to-day basis about, you know, how they fuel a conversation, you know, a topic that might be had around their mates or work colleagues, or it might be, you know, at the other end of the line might be at the polling booths, you know, about, you know, who you're going to vote for, and just making a little bit more of a decision instead of like, oh, well, my grandfather voted for these guys and my dad did, and so I'm going to vote for them. Or, you know, that's what my mates at work vote for, so I'm going to vote for them. And so suddenly it's like, oh, well, hang on, I've got a brain. So, you know, I'm noticing a lot of shit going on in the world, so I'm going to start trying to work out what's the best thing to do based off what I've collected. So I think it's a great way just to bring a few more things to light.
Yeah, I think for the things I've always really given a shit about, like anti-racism, anti-fascism, and progressive politics or whatever, you know, like I have always been about, not with everything, I probably irritate, I do have a habit of airing out opinions that irritate everyone who just came on board a week ago. You know, I'm not very good at building a very broad church in many senses. But with the things I care most about, like the groups that I've been part of that I mentioned earlier and such, like, it's always been important to me to sort of try and make a bit of a broad church. Like because things like anti-racism and anti-fascism, like there's people who've done a real number on all that, you know. So where that all seems like we're all a bunch of soy boys who couldn't possibly understand what the working class feel like, you know. We've managed to, you know, a lot of the causes that I've been part of have been successfully typecast and vilified by people who are much better at the internet than we are generally. And I suppose I think that you can't just put that off onto alt-right media personalities and what have you. There's also a lot of lefties who've done a pretty bad number on themselves. Like, I know a lot of activists, permanent lifelong activists, who constantly talk about the working class, but they couldn't have any fucking idea. They're like so disconnected. For me, actually being able to explain stuff and have yarns with people in a way that's pretty straightforward is kind of part of the same thing. It's the same thing as in, we're like, so I'm not just going to talk about how stupid racists are. Like, let's get out there. Let's go out there and scream blue murder at them. And people will laugh more at that than they will go, you know, racism is bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, put your money where your mouth is, you know?
Well, it's a little bit of, I think it's just a bit of compassion, you know, you sort of, being able to understand, you know, because you really, I mean, the whole point of this is to, yeah, okay, you're highlighting the extremes, but at least from my point of view anyway, I mean, you might have a different look on it, but, you know, you really want to bring these extremes to light in that middle area, the people that just can sway in whatever direction or just sort of get on with everyday life, but could easily be convinced of any sort of bullshit that gets thrown out there through fear. And so you sort of want to bring these things to light a little bit more. And I think just it, but as you said before, I mean, you know, I think, I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely sort of a left-leaning person. But one thing that turned me off, yeah, many years ago, and especially around that time in particular, is that it was that sort of disconnect from working class or particular parts of the country or whatever it might be, and just this overly massive stereotype that was being created, and probably only through a minority of people, but a minority of people that had a lot of voice. And so, you know, I grew up, I mean, I live in Sydney these days, but I mean, I grew up in regional Queensland and I was all over the traps and I've still got a lot of friends and family up that way. And the stereotypes that got thrown at just Queenslanders in general, which, yeah, it's not all wrong, but you know, there's plenty of people out there that, you know, rely on things that are probably anti-left in a way, you know, just, you know, fossil fuels and different industries and things that might or are more than likely or definitely harmful for the environment. And but you can't just point the finger and say you're fucking the environment and not give them any other options. And so I think there was just this disconnect with communication where I think people were just not being overly considerate or understanding of just your everyday person and not being able to translate the message in a way that made sense for the person on the other end of the speaker, you know. So it was just an interesting thing for me that I found, and I think it just forced me to be a bit more compassionate because I thought, well, I can't get too preachy either. Like, I mean, I'll definitely talk about things that are important, but I've got to back it up. And I'm going to be able to talk to it in a way that makes sense for as many people as possible. Otherwise, I can only do so much, and then it becomes a little bit more of a virtue signaling sort of expedition rather than anything of substance. And so I think most people sort of that are progressive probably have a hell of a lot of substance with what they're saying. But I think unfortunately the people like on the other side of the spectrum, on, you know, your conservative side, it's the minorities of both sides that are just the loudest, and they're the ones that create such a polarizing platform, which just makes us all go, what the fuck?
Yeah, man. You know, we've got, you know, someone like myself with the things that I do, I've got two opponents, and one is the limitations of the way I communicate, you know, and to be myself. But the other one is like other people who are actually also working to try and typecast, like I said before, like typecast the way that I am, like I'm some, you know, would it would benefit other people to have me typecast as like a permanently offended inner city cloistered social justice warrior, soy boy type. Like, all of that is a bunch of things that actually, if you looked at my shit and all the shit I've done over the years and the way I am, I'm the last motherfucker to get offended about stuff. The question, the very word itself imply that my whole thing is that things hurt my feelings personally about me, and then I roll out and start complaining about them. Well, usually what I do is take the fucking piss. I don't actually carry on for things to be fucking banned. I just call them out for being fucking shit, and I try and imagine an ideal Australia in which everyone all does that with me. So you don't actually need the government or what have you to fucking ban anything for you in most instances, because that ideal Australia just has a lot of people with their heads screwed on, right, who could all come out in a big chorus and go, no, you're a fucking shit cunt. I don't want to fucking bar you. That's not the same as banning things. Mm. Actually, I'm more of an anarchist than anything. I don't want fucking government regulating absolutely everything wherever possible, you know. So there's these stereotypes of what the left is, but some of that also is as you said, you know, it's a carefully constructed stereotype because it limits the effectiveness of what I can do. Sure, yeah, but it's also, I can't just blame everyone else. It's also the way a lot of the left carry on. You know, there's that bubble type divide between country and city. You talked about fossil fuels for people up in Queensland before. Well, there's no conversation to be had about ending fossil fuels. A very important conversation, but there's no fucking point having that conversation unless you're talking about what we're going to replace them with. That's for exactly people, right, in terms, yeah, of jobs. You know what I mean? Jobs or income sources or whatever. That is not a conversation you can just have by lecturing people and telling them off necessarily, you know.
Yeah.
And you said about the Queensland thing in terms of that whole stereotype of people from Queensland being racist or what have you. And again, dude, I always say this to people who do that to me, you know, because I'm jack of that as well, man. After years of anti-fascism in Melbourne, I know where the people are by and large who want to blow stuff up. They're in Melbourne. They're in the Melbourne's suburbs. They're not from Queensland. There might be a lot of casual racism up in certain country areas or what have you. Sure, that's all over Australia. This is the colony, you know what I mean? 250 years ago, people came in here, you know, they took the land, and the way this country's set up, there's always going to be a lot of casual racism in my mind. You know, it's just something you've got to deal with on an individual level, you know, or by talking to people. But big structurally and what have you, you can't just say it's a country thing, man. As I say, the worst of the worst have always been Melbourneites.
Well, it's an easy character to create, you know. It's sort of like the American hillbilly, you know, the Deep South, and creating this ideal racist, you know, who is it? Oh, well, it's somebody that's probably, you know, got a low education, has never travelled out of their city, they're probably, you know, work on a farm, or they just, you know, got a little shop in a tiny town and no one comes through, and, you know, and just very sort of, you know, blue collar worker, et cetera, et cetera. And you just continue to stereotype and basically just beat the shit out of people that come close to that sort of makeup. And so suddenly, you know, those casual racists out there, you know, products of environment, generations, et cetera, et cetera, and not giving anybody excuses at all, but it sort of just makes people sort of push away more from, you know, these really important points that are sitting underneath all the noise. And so people start to go, you know what? Like, because I think a lot of us, you know, as much as, I mean, I'll just talk about myself, actually. You know, I'm a big child half the time, you know. I'll just rebel sometimes just because everybody likes something. And so I'll just go, well, I'll like the opposite thing for a time being, you know, and that's just my childhood. That's me going through school just to be difficult. I like being difficult. And then later on, I'll calm down and I'll go, well, deep down, I knew that the right thing to do was that, but I'm just going to be a little bit rebellious. And I think a lot of people out there just don't like being told what to do, don't like being lectured. And so, you know, in the short term, they will maybe self-sabotage themselves just out of spite to try and prove a point to somebody who's pointing the finger at them. So it's just it's a weird thing. So yeah, even for you to say, look, yeah, like the majority of these people are in Melbourne suburbia, you know, it's, there you go. You know, it's, It's a
I've got fucking legendary comrades up in Queensland, up in far north Queensland, what have you, are some of the staunchest anti-racists out. You know what I mean? It really, really doesn't matter what area you're in. And actually, here's the thing. There's areas in Queensland, far north Queensland, whatever, where country, where communities are sometimes so integrated with like Indigenous folk that live in the area and what have you, that they're actually better, that they're more everyday anti-racists in my book, like as in that they reject it more naturally than someone in Melbourne who's like standing next to me at a fucking rally, but they've never actually hung out with anyone who isn't a white student in their life. You know what I mean? I get that constantly, man. Yeah. I get there are people who are like, they talk the talk of like left politics and anti-racism, but you could tell they've just got no experience with like Vietnamese people unless it's like eating pho at a restaurant. I mean, that's, being racist is different to just sort of like, you know, whether you've got that worldly experience or what have you. But I also think that the reality is that I'd rather be hanging out with people who've actually had experience amongst different walks of life, because then that's practice-led. You know what I mean? Like, you know, yeah.
Well, it's more rounded, isn't it? And you get more texture out of people, and suddenly someone's got sort of like when you're young and you finally get the chance to do some traveling, you know, whether it be just out of your town or overseas or whatever, and you suddenly go, oh, fucking hell, there's a lot of people out here and a lot of people that have got nothing, that are nothing like me or completely different beliefs or whatever it might be. And then suddenly you come home and go, oh, there's a bit of perspective. And then suddenly you calm down a little bit with some of the things that you thought you knew it all.
Yeah, totally. You know what I would actually say to everyone, though, and this is such a popular misconception, like everyone listening, that one of the biggest misconceptions about what racism really is that it's, and this is peddled by left people so aggressively, as by everyone actually, so aggressively by left people that some right people in like a belligerent way or what have you, or people who are self-described racist, because they're out there, you know, they end up going, yeah, that's me. And their misconception is that racism is based out of ignorance. And it's, you know, and that ties in actually to a lot of this thing about, you know, racist hicks from redneck country Queensland. They're just really stupid. They haven't had education like people from the city, so therefore they're more racist and what have you. Racism is not, it's got nothing to do with education or intelligence or what have you. We don't start, because that implies that we start from a default state of fucking hating people who've got different coloured skin or fucking hair or whatever to us, and then, you know, who people who wear funny hats, like we're innately geared to hate them. That shit's a white supremacist wet dream. That's the shit that they go on about. No, we're not actually. What racism is, it's not based out of ignorance. It's based out of self-interest and power. Because the whole thing with race history is it started in the 15, 1600s, partly in Europe, but mostly in America. And it was a way of improving the marketing aspect of the slave trade, because the whole idea was that this will help us to, you know, they started vesting these black people that they were getting from Africa with these inherently superior physical qualities, like as a typecasting them, because we didn't really have this sort of overarching theory of races, of like a white race and a black race before then. And they started making up these overarching race things, but that was in order to actually help with the promotion and help defend the intercontinental slave trade. And the interesting thing in America was that every time, and so originally you had white and black slaves all together, right? But then they would start organizing together, union style, to try and fight back against their slavery or improve their conditions. And this happened about five, six times throughout the 15 and 1600s. Their American masters would brutally shut it down. And then what they would do afterwards was that they would enshrine more and more of these differences with whites and blacks into law in America, because they were trying to get the white slaves to feel that they were superior and somehow had some more rights vested in them and more superiority than the black slaves. And this is inherently a game of divide and conquer. Mm. Because if I'm a white slave and you're a black slave standing next to me, we both have as little as each other. But if I can somehow convince myself that I am in some made-up racial hierarchy superior to you, you know, like I am actually, I feel like I am superior to you, then, you know, that will go, I will be less likely to actually organise and to fight for my own freedom alongside you. That's the little history of race theory and racism as it was sort of developed. And but actually in the hundreds of years that followed that, we all started to, you know, colonialism started to take these ideas abroad. We started taking different countries, like the British took Australia and brought these ideas with them, and it became enshrined. A lot of us just take it for granted. But to be anti-racist is to think to yourself, no, let's try and imagine a world in which we don't fucking live like that. We don't think like that. We can break free of that bullshit.
Well, it's kind of like what you said before when you were sort of attending some of these very special sort of marches that were being put together, these get-togethers, and watching sort of, you know, these national socialists sort of bickering amongst each other. It's sort of like this very self-interest within their own clique, you know, where the ego individually or their own personal agenda is stronger than the message that they're trying to send out. Like it's almost like, well, they don't actually really, really believe in what they're preaching, because there's a self agenda there. Because if the self agenda wasn't there, then they probably wouldn't be there at all. They'd probably just be living with whatever's out there, like whatever's currently existing. But because there's an opportunity to progress as an individual and take advantage of a situation, then I guess that's what probably attracts all of these people to these types of groups. It's very ego driven and very ego inflating.
That's right, because there's so much more barefaced about their investment in self interest and power, because they're deeply entrenched within historical race theory, which is all about self interest and power. Mm. And I mean, you saying that is like probably a more advanced understanding of how national socialists work and how they fall apart than most sort of soft left people that you'll hear around on Twitter in Australia, man. But that's exactly it. They fall apart and they divide and conquer, endlessly, because it's all about self-interest and power, and they can't help it. They end up, they have this hyper-individualism and they end up fighting with each other. But it goes in a wave, actually. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's why, see, the 2015-16 Patriot Movement was an attempt to gloss up their patriotic credentials and hide, you know, among some of the leaders, like Blair Cottrell, like to hide their National Socialist ideals, and, you know, because they were media darlings for a little while there. But as it goes along, you know, you can see that the mums and dads fell away from the movement and it became smaller and smaller. And then the only people that glommed onto it were more and more violent. And then they would get this disenfranchised by the fact that the movement wasn't all that popular, you know, or that it hadn't gone the way that they were promised by their leaders that it would go. And then you get people like Brenton Tarrant in Christchurch who eventually go and take matters into their own hands. Mm-hmm. So it's the natural outcome. I mean, that Brenton Tarrant guy, he was on our pages, like left pages, like I remember this, you know what I mean? We've still got some of his comments, like him going to us, you know, oh, this is the Patriot Movement is a peaceful one. Blair Cottrell is peaceful, you know.
there's a bit of a hypocrite in the making.
Oh, man. Oh, when we came across those comments, it's like, whoa, dude, like good, great endorsement there, you know.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
So I know that you mentioned before, like just, due to what you do and what you get involved with, you're very careful and I guess aware of how much you disclose about what you do or what, you know, your background and your personal sort of life. But you know, where does a lot of this stem from? Is there an event in your life or in your childhood or sort of, you know, early teens or whatever that sort of gave you sort of a bit of a spotlight on this type of stuff that you thought, this is something I really want to, you know, I'm starting to feel passionate about and I want to get involved with it? Was there anything in particular, or is it just sort of a, I don't know, a natural sort of progression?
Well, I'm pretty happy to talk about my life and this and that. Like, if you really, really wanted to protect your identity, you wouldn't do what I've fucking done over the years and just sort of
plaster my face
and, yeah, exactly, and then go out to all these rallies. Like, I accepted that a pretty important part. You know, it's a pretty well known image of anti-fascists that they always wear a mask and this and that. You know what I mean? That might work for other people, but eventually I just did. I've gone too far down a path. I'm like, we're just going to abandon it all. So I grew up in Melton, and I grew up with parents who'd recently just had to flee from Thatcher's Britain because it just left no money or income for anyone. And they lost the shop. They had a little small business, but they lost that, and they had to flee, and they came to Australia. Now, my parents are of Irish background, and also, so that's actually Provo IRA background. So these were people who were very much Irish nationalists. And also my dad's background is Armenian. And when his mum was still being conceived, the Ottoman Empire conducted the last century's first genocide. Upon them and you know, killing 3/4 of the Armenians. And so in the Armenian genocide, what they did with a lot of them was that they forced them on a death march up across the desert, being killed by bandits along the way or dying, obviously, of thirst or starvation. And that's what killed off the vast majority of Armenians. But and that's where my great grandmother was carrying my grandmother during that death march. Wow. They arrived up in Syria and then were booted out to, they settled, like a lot of Armenians did actually, in Calcutta, and that's where my one of my grandparents was born. And they changed their surname, they went over to London, and that's where my father was born. So I had always had that sense of being taught about the little that my dad knew of that history, and also I think consequently my dad was very, very passionate about the Israeli occupation of Palestine as I was a child, and he was one of those constant letter to the editor writers about that and various other issues. And I think I always had a sense of probably had he instilled in me by him a sense of what, you know, is colonial injustice and the lies of states who really don't want to admit to their own their brutal histories or their brutal occupations. I think I probably had that sense installed in me from him. Mm. But he was also a massive shit stirrer, and in those letters to the editors and just generally as a person, and I probably got that sense of like enjoying being a smart ass or getting into conflict from dad, you know what I mean? But also, yeah, I mean, growing up in Melton and me being a little bit of a bookworm and a nerd, I probably didn't gel too much with, like, what I saw as, like, blokey kind of Australia around me, you know what I mean? Like, I became the contrarian that my dad is. Like, I really didn't like that kind of, like, general blokiness, sportiness. So, like, I was more into books and then video games than I was into the sport. And I think as I became more of a contrarian as I got older, I just always had a bit of a wrestle with that sort of thing. When it came time, so fast forward to sort of 2015-16, when I saw that Patriot movement break out in places like Melton, where I grew up, I think I saw, like, a combination of that tall poppy syndrome and that blokey insecurity and all these sort of things, like, glomming together, pretending that their enemy was Islam, but it was no different to their enemy being gay people or their enemy being fucking, you know, black people, their enemy being the fucking Asians, or, you know, they'll always pick someone because it's based on that kind of insecurity and that tall poppy syndrome of that masculinity, that particular kind of shit masculinity in Australia, it's always got to pick an enemy and say that's the reason for my problems. You know what I mean? And I think that's what started me down this road. But then, yeah, over time you start learning more about it. And the more death threats you get, the more invested you get in, like, fucking with those people over time. By the time you've had 1,000 death threats from people, you're kind of like, I'm not going to let you off the fucking hook, mate. You don't get to do that to me and then fucking have me just go, oh, onto my next hobby now.
That's right. Well, you've invested now, so you know you got to follow it through and you got to play the long game.
That's right. This is about believing in yourself. You know, you got to see it through, mate.
Well, I tell you what, I mean, I've only sort of discovered, you know, your stuff, in the last couple of months, and just things I don't even know. I think the first thing I saw pop up was, it must have been on Instagram, and it might have been that video where you're taking the piss out of people getting upset about the graffiti on the walls. And was it in AC/DC Lane or something like that?
Oh, it's in Hosier Lane in the city.
Yeah.
We probably had this we've been talking a lot about anti-fascism and anti-racism. I do just do a lot of shit talking and being a fucking idiot about whatever other stuff as well.
But it all links in together. I think it's still a case of making a mockery over just stupid behaviour, you know, whether it be really extreme or everyday just dumb things that people get swept up in. I think it's still sort of highlighting something with humour. I think it's really effective, because I thought it was an absolute crack up, and then obviously saw a few other videos that you put up since then, and then I dug back and went, oh, and then I actually recognised you from some of those videos back in 2016, and I thought, oh, now I've connected the dots.
And I see.
Because obviously I remember them popping up, in feeds back then.
Right.
And so they thought, it's the same guy. There you go. But it's a common thread. I mean, at least from my point of view, sort of having a look at, you know, this is your life, you know, thing. It's you sort of just putting a bit of spotlight on just ridiculous, absurd behaviour and just in very varying volumes of it.
Yeah, I believe in the role of playing like a fucking clown or a fool, and what I mean by that is that you stand apart from what's going on and you try and point out what the most where the loosest thread is, like what makes people, what's making people look the stupidest about something new that's going on, like what is people's weakest, you know, loosest thread about it. Like, what is it that, like, for example, you pointed at that Hosier Lane thing, you know, I just noticed there was this distinct thread of like hand-wringing inner city twee, the age-reading lefty, kind of like, oh no, don't destroy. This was the Hosier, for anyone who doesn't understand, like, but the Hosier Lane was paint bombed by a bunch of people. I used to be in rap, the hip hop scene for ages, so I've had a lot of familiarity with graphic artists. It's never been my thing, but I've always been around it in my opinion. If you don't understand that people just going over other bits of graph with a big paint bomb type scenario is a very inherently important part of the graph culture, a real graph culture, then you've probably got no right to be commenting on graph culture. But nevertheless, like, it's been very commodified now, and I think, like, people view all the graffiti in Hosier Lane in Melbourne as being like part of a City of Melbourne tourist campaign more than the actual culture that it is.
Yeah.
And so there was just a really obnoxious attitude of, oh no, we've lost our vibrant city. at the time, and it was really rare. It was just hilarious. So I just went into Hosier Lane and did a video like that, just me, like, throwing, having an absolute meltdown while looking at the walls covered in paint bomb, you know.
I think, have you given, so there's a very distinctive voice that comes out when you're doing these videos. Is it, have you got a character in mind? Have you given this character a name? Is there anything sort of more to it? Because it's very distinctive, and I think it obviously adds an extra level of humour to the whole thing, because it's just, it's so animated.
It is a combination, a little bit of people I've known over my life. I think there's probably an ex-partner, and I think maybe an immediate family member in there that really come to mind, that I think I'm sort of mining when I do that kind of thing. But yeah, like it just, I think it's just my go-to. But it's not necessarily a character, although it should be. Like it seems to be coming up again and again, you know. I've been doing it in the wake of coronavirus. Yeah. I actually intend to do a lot more of those. Like I've been doing like this snitching character who just wants to die. I was almost going to do, I was ended up being really busy that weekend, but I wanted to do another video on the weekend of Easter of like, you know, it was that same woman. Her name was Rachel in that respect. Her dobbing on the neighbours for like having her baby out on the lawn looking for Easter eggs. Like I like the idea of her going, "Yeah, get that fucking corona child off the lawn, you fucking assholes! Get him away!" And they're screaming at a baby whilst calling the cops on the phone, like insisting that the cops issue a baby with a $1,600 notice. Because like I find one of the most interesting things that's happening is this sort of like natural voluntary snitch culture that's coming up. Like we all understand the importance of social distancing, but just that sort of thing where people want to
people get a rush, don't they? Especially the people that love a bit of gossip and they love to dob on people and things like that. So it's, you know, and they're usually people that have a fairly mundane day-to-day life and there's not a lot of drama, so they have to try and find it, you know. And so what better sort of opportunity where you're almost given a green light by the government to be calling people out and trying to find this thing because you're now socially responsible. And so it's a bit of a virtue signaling sort of adrenaline rush that people get. So I loved it. It clicked so hard when I saw that video because it was just exactly what I see in a virtual sense online when people make a big note about themselves or they start taking photos of other people out in public that are too close to each other. And I just go, well, okay, yeah, maybe. Yeah, you could be right. But, I mean, what are we doing? You know, it's just it's a really weird behaviour that it creates. And you know, right, what we're saying at the start, it's sort of this really weird time that most of us have never experienced anything like this. And so now we're in this position where we're trying to adjust our behavior and try and work out how do we interact with each other that's going to be constructive and also generous and compassionate when, you know, for a lot of people the impulse is to fucking get fired up, you know.
Fucking oath, man. And so the for me, like looking at that snitchy tendency, it's not if I just came out online and just lectured people for it, well, join the club. That's what everyone on fucking Twitter does every day, as well as actually lecturing people for not social distancing. It's just lecture culture, you know. But so I could either do that or I could just, you know, I think if you can successfully portray the shittiest, cringiest parts of something, then you can get people to vacate that. You know, like they'll not want to be that. But at the same time, there's nuance there. Like I understand that if you saw 1,000 people down the road all rolling around in the fucking grass with each other, then you might think to yourself, fuck, we've got to do something about this. They've all got coronavirus, you know. But there's a cringy aspect. And there's an aspect of people dobbing each other. So to me, the best thing you could possibly do is still just to portray the shittest cunt imaginable. You know, like just be that person.
Sounds like your mantra, like you're just your mission.
Portray the shittest. Yeah, it's my obsession. Exactly, portray the shit. That's
a T-shirt.
That's it, isn't it? That portray the shittest cunt possible. I like that. It's a lot better. Yeah, man.
Oh, man. Well, I'll definitely... Because I put show notes up for each of the episodes so people can go and have a sticky beak. So I'll put all the links and everything that you're up to and you've been involved with, and I'll chuck some of these videos in, some of the older ones as well. But where's the best place for people to start to dig into your world and probably learn about some of the stuff that you're immersed in on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, for sure. Well, there's actually, I mean, so I'm on a bunch of different media platforms, but people could start at my website, which is tomtanicky.net, and that actually has a list of the overarching projects in there. I just put that website up a few months ago, but it's just a handy way of, I suppose, going through all the different projects there. I am now, you know, I'm not a podcast master veteran like you, and I have... I have just recently started a podcast because that's what everyone does now. Everyone has to have a podcast. But I am learning so much about it that I can only imagine the amount of fucking lessons you must have learned hundreds of episodes in. But look, my thing is not my podcast is meant to be a relatively up to date thing of me inquiring about, I guess, political or social grassroots kind of stuff. So not Canberra politics, because fuck that. Mm. But and that kind of thing. Plus, I always do a few of my dumb skits in there because I'm really enjoying doing them in audio only at the moment. It frees you up to fuck around with the video, and you could just paint a picture with audio. And I'm really, really fucking enjoying that.
I'll definitely recommend that. I mean, what's it called? The Poor Can Feed the Birds.
It's called The Poor Can Feed the Birds. Yeah, that's right.
And
thank you so much, man. On my latest episode, I did a 5G deradiation meditation by a character I have called Zachary, who's like a neo spiritual character, but he's a fucking grifter, and he's a nasty, horrible grifter actually. But I haven't done anything with him much for a while, but I wanted him. I've sort of been thinking it's his time to come back as an anti-5G activist. So that's the podcast website, tomtanicky.net. And you can also find me under Tom Tanicky on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I have a Patreon page if anyone wants to chuck me a clam, if they look at all this shit and they decide that they appreciate it. And if people want to follow my stuff, they can find me on all of those platforms and YouTube.
Sounds good. Or I'll dump it all in the show notes as well. But Tom, thanks for the chinwag. It was good.
Hi, thanks so much, and thanks very much for having me, and thanks for listening.
All right, if you can't get enough and you want to learn more about Tom's world, you can go to tomtanicky.net. He's on the socials, so just search for his name as well on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. I believe he's on YouTube as well. And he's on Patreon as well. So go and search for Tom Tanicky. I'll have everything in the show notes, of course, over at andydowling.net or andysocial.net. There'll also be a bunch of clickable links in the show notes as well. So depending on what you're listening through right now, you should be able to stab your little stubby digits against the phone and check it out. Now, speaking of Patreon, I'm on there. So go and check it out, patreon.com/andydowling. And a little shout out for my social circle tier, my $10 tier mates that have been supporting. All the guys that are on Patreon have been a massive, massive help. I've only been up and running for about a month or so, and that first Patreon payment that came through, oh man, so good. So that money goes straight back into the podcast. It covers editing, hosting, gear, and it's also going to go towards my first main goal on Patreon, which is to get to $200 a month, which means that I'll be able to ramp this podcast up to 2 guests per week. That's right, folks. I'm up in the ante. So hopefully sooner rather than later, because I have a massive backlog of people that I've already had chats with, and they will be coming out over the coming weeks. But I'd love to be able to get these conversations out quicker. But in order to do more episodes, it's more cost. So the Patreon is a massive help for that. So all the money's going towards all this stuff, all self-funded, and it's just less of my own personal money, which means that it's more sustainable and makes it more fun. I don't have to stress about sort of trying to work out how to keep it all afloat. And I'm psyched that we're at 228 episodes so far, and no signs of slowing down, and Patreon's just ensuring that it keeps firing away. So my social circle tier folks, thank you so much to Andrew from Perth, Mick G from Sydney, Ash from Deniliquin, Dan from Dapto, Rod from Rayleigh in North Carolina, and Saul from Oxford in the UK. Thank you so much. Oh, and also, sorry, my latest Patreon supporter for the social circle, Patrick from Canberra as well. Legends. Thank you very much. You guys are a large chunk of what comes through on Patreon, and it means a hell of a lot. And to all you guys that have jumped on board so far, thank you very, very much. But support starts from $1 a month. You can just chuck $1 my way each and every month. This is a little feel-good payment. And if there's a lot of you guys doing it, then it's a huge, huge help. So consider that if you can. Otherwise, the fact that you're listening to me right now is amazing. So very, very cool. So if you want to continue to check out the podcast, you can go to andysocial.net. andydowling.net. You can check out my other podcasts, Not to Yell School or Self Starter. Check out our band Lord, lord.net.au, And you can follow me on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, bloody YouTube. Go and subscribe to my YouTube channel. I'm going to start adding some videos there and doing some other shit. And appreciate the support. And until next week, another episode coming. Should I tell you what it is? No, let's not do that. But I will say that it's time to bring a female into the mix. So we'll have a lady on next week. Let's do that. All right, until next week, folks, take care and ta-ta. Larry, please.